If you're listening to this, welcome to the experiment. The Sip Mightily podcast begins now. Do you remember the first time we had drinks together in DC?
Ooh, wee. I think that's the time I try to forget.
When you was about to fight me over Russell Westbrook?
Yo, Ed, man, no, I will never, ever, ever truly be able to apologize to you enough for that. That, like, we've all had those moments, like, where, like, we drink and we drink a little too much and we feel, like, this energy building up and it's like, I felt it. And, dog, again, I am so sorry, bro.
Nobody knows why you're apologizing.
Bro, you know why I'm apologizing, and that's all that matters to me, bro. That is one of the most embarrassing moments of my life, bro. I'll never be able to get over that.
Yo, Justin, it's good to talk to you.
Always, brother.
You know, for the people that listen to the pod, they don't know that it took a lot of circumstances. And one of the things that I definitely wanted to talk to about is mentorship, because the way in which we got connected is through someone that we both really revere in John Gotti.
Oh, man.
And you know, it just so happens that two light-skinned dudes with big beards and pledge the same fraternity got connected by a dude who smokes cigarettes like he drinks water. So, I wanted to talk to you first about, like, what does the role of mentorship have in your walk now as being a culture writer for the Undefeated and working for ESPN and, you know, just like your growth and your journey in the career?
Man, that's actually a really good question. And I'll start with a short and simple answer, and then I'll expand on it. Man, mentorship has been everything. Mm-hmm. Mentorship has saved me from, I don't know, I'm quitting this industry years ago, bro. Like, I remember when I first started with the smoking section, this was the summer of 2009. Mm-hmm. Because I had always wanted to write for the smoking section. You know, a lot of people who see, like, Rolling Stone and New York Times and, you know, Boston Globe and all these as these, like, you know, landmark publications that you want to write for. And of course they are. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I still respect and revere them to this day. But, like, in terms of what I was really interested in, like, sports and music and culture and history and everything, like, smoking section provided that platform to me tenfold. And I'll never forget, they had posted something like calling all writers, we're looking for new writers. I was like, bro, this is my chance.
Yeah,
this is my chance to do it. So I sent them, I guess it was an email or however they requested, people reach out to them, and I never heard anything back. But I tell Gotti this story all the time, and Gotti does not remember it. I think he remembers parts of it. But they had posted there was a Eddie Murphy bit from, I can't remember whether it was Delirious or Raw. I think it was Delirious. Mm-hmm. It might have been. I can't remember. But he's talking about grilling out on the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. That's Delirious. Yeah.
The Brontosaurus Burgers. Dust mm-hmm. over there. Yeah. So I just randomly commented. I was like, bro, like, this is, you know, I just posted this on my site. And then they posted it. Like, yo, this is, like, it's love. And so Gotti and TC were in the comments. Mm-hmm. And they was like, yo, Tinsley, like, hit us up again. And one thing led to another. Like, yo, we like your stuff. Like, come on and write for us. So that was a big moment. And then one of Gotti and I's first real conversation, I was like, so what are you expecting from me from this? Like, how much do you want me to write? Like, what can I write about? This man told me straight up. He was like, you write as much as you want. You write on whatever you want. But whatever the case may be, just be yourself while doing it.
Yeah.
And I was still very, very early in the writing game at that point. It, like, super early. Like, it so early to the point where the Sports Fan Journal didn't even exist yet. You were still on edthesportsfan.com.
Yeah.
You know, so just to give you, like, time and context. Mm-hmm. Like, and over the years, bro, like, Gotti just, he just gave me so much confidence, dog. Like, so much confidence as to where it's like, yo, bro, own what you're writing. Like, you know what you're writing about. Be confident in this and take that into the world. And I took that with me to the Undefeated. And obviously, so many people know about the starting blocks and the bumps that, you know, the Undefeated had getting out the gate. Mm-hmm. But I just knew if I ever got the chance to, like, put my work on a big platform, that writing for the Smoking Section, and this is where I turned to you. Like, you and Kenny came to me for the Sports Fan Journal. Like, yo, we want you to write some pieces for the Sports Fan Journal. And y'all were my brothers even then. We weren't even doing the UC show yet.
Yeah.
And, like, I consider you and Kenny to be mentors of mine. Mm. You know, like, y'all – and it wasn't like y'all ever gave me, like, okay, this is life and this is how you got to move through life. This was more like – it's like, yo, man, be free to do what you do. Like, you're really good at what you do. Like, keep doing it. And so when I got into these situations at ESPN where I would be in locker rooms and I would be at different music festivals talking to people, like, I was never really – I'm not saying that I'm, you know, the next coming to Ralph Wiley or anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always felt comfortable in those situations because of people like you, because of people like Ed, because of people like Gotti. Like, I've been doing – like – stories that you read for me now, I've been writing these type of stories for years.
That's what I tell people all the time inside. I'm like, yo, that's – I don't even need to know the byline. I can just read the headline or the title or I mean, the mm-hmm. first couple of paragraphs. I'm like, oh, Tinsley wrote that. Like, I already know. Yeah. I can just tell immediately. I've literally probably edited or read maybe 250,000 of your words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just really think about it, like, yeah, like, for sure. And the thing about mentorship is, you know, mentorship is just a relationship towards friendship. And if you don't have peers, you know, I think Kenny and I always looked at you as a peer. I did look at Gotti as a mentor just because he had skin in the game. And when you realize when people got skin in the game, the one thing people will do immediately is they will save you time.
Mm-hmm.
And they will mm-hmm. save you time and help you get to that reel as quickly as possible, because you realize there are so many things. Even when I start thinking about this podcast and the creation of it, like, I was putting up so many roadblocks and hurdles just to do it. And I, you know, one of the homies was like, bro, just do it. Like, who cares if it's trash? Like, we love you. Like, it's going to get better. Right. And I think we all probably felt like that about our writing. You know, anything we do as a creative, like, you're never good your first time. You're never good the first 10 times. It could be you're not good at writing. You're not good at dealing with women. You're not good at drinking. You're not good at anything. Like, those first couple of times, you got to knock them hood rats out the way, figuratively speaking, not literally. But you got to get them out the way so you can be refining your craft. And so, you know, I always cheers and tip my cap to Gotti and to someone like Kenny, because Kenny is, I mean, you and I know Kenny, and I know the listeners don't know who Kenny is, but Kenny was my best man at my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny earned the right to be my best man at wedding because he never lied to me. And he always, you know, Kenny's the king of telling some truths when you need to hear them. And, yeah, you know, sure. I always appreciate him for that. And so I want to bridge that conversation to the time you introduced me to Danielle Smith.
Mm.
So, and the reason why that matters is because, you know, this podcast is called Sip Mightily. And the thing that when she offered drinks to us, she offered Macallan 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'm getting drinks ordered to me by this black woman that I've heard a lot about. And she's ordering drinks that I never order for myself. I was like, you know what? Let me go on ahead and buckle in, right? And so, and that was just a really glorious conversation. And I didn't know at that time that at some point we would actually end up being colleagues and coworkers mm-hmm. to a degree. And so I always like to, you know, ask, like, you know, what are some of those conversations? And it doesn't have to be Danielle, but, like, you're sitting there with a drink in your hand and you realize, like, oh, like, I'm having a conversation with people I'm probably not supposed to be having a conversation with, or I can't believe, like, if the homies knew this was happening, because, you know, Danielle was also, I think, has been a mentor for a lot of people. And I think she gave me a lot of encouragement to be like, oh, like, if you make this happen, like, you're welcome here and we got you. And that was really powerful. And then she knocked that Macallan back in a way that I still to this day can vividly remember. But I'm curious, like, if you have, like, you know, some of those experiences on your own.
Yeah. There's been quite a few moments where I'm like, bro, what the hell is going on right now? Mm-hmm. And we just talked about mentorship. Like Danielle Smith, she was my editor at.
And before you even do that, explain who, because like people might not know, I've heard the name, but who is she? Like, what's her past?
Danielle Smith, and she won't let me say this if I'm around her, but she's not around right now. And yeah, I'm gonna
she'll
say
be all right.
Danielle Smith is the epitome of a living legend.
Yes.
A living legend. Like if you consider yourself tapped into whatever the nebulous definition of what the culture is, she's been tapped into that for a long time. If you read Vibe back in the 90s, that was her fingerprint. Like, yeah. She is such an integral part of just, not even just hip hop culture, but just Black music culture.
Right.
That, you know, I grew up reading her, like, in terms of like what Stuart Scott was for, you know, sports highlights and ESPN. People like Danielle Smith was just like that for like music journalism for me. So when the Undefeated launched in 2016, Danielle Smith was my editor.
Right.
I got a chance to have deep conversations just about, not even just about pieces that I'm working on, it just her experiences in the game, where how she told me she got started and just some of the highs and lows that she's dealt with. She is a North Star for me. And the fact that I say that, the fact that I can say that I not only worked with her, but I consider her a very, very close friend, that means the world to me. Mm. So, you know, just the fact that, you know, I'm there have been plenty of places where Danielle and I have been, whether it be New York, it could be LA. We've been in different places for work, and we just meet at the bar and just have some drinks, and we just start, you know, chopping it up just about the game, just about the industry. So we could spend this entire podcast talking about how much love and how much respect and how much I revere Danielle Smith. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like other cases where I've been like that, man, there have been, I'll never forget, and if this feels like an eternity ago, Ed. So this was opening night in the NBA. Do you remember when the Clippers and the Lakers played opening night?
Yes. Yeah, was in town. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was in town. So I'm there for the game. I'm covering parts of the game. I ended up linking up with, you know, a friend of mine, colleague after the game. He was like, yo, we're going to grab a drink over at the hotel. Ended up grabbing a drink over at the hotel. Charles Barkley's there, bro.
Right.
And, like, and, you know, Charles is having a good time. You know, he's just talking about the game. He's buying drinks for people. And, you know, I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I'm in, like, basketball debates with Charles Barkley, bro. like, I'm in basketball debates with Charles Barkley. And the thing is, he wasn't just entertaining me just because I was a person over there. Like, he knew my name at that point in time. I guarantee you, like, if he saw me right now, he probably wouldn't recognize me from cracking the ball. But he knew my name at that point, and he was asking me, so what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I'm like, bro, I'm over here talking about basketball with one of the greatest basketball players of all time. It's Charles Barkley. And then a couple of minutes later, like, Too Short comes over.
Hey, yes.
Short Dog.
Short dog in the building.
Like, Short and I, like, and I'll never forget, again, this is this season, Ed, the 2019-2020 season. And so Short and I, we're having a drink, and we're just talking. And he was like, man, I'm telling you, the Warriors are going to win the title this year. I'm like, with all due respect, bro,
right.
Like, you realize these Warriors ain't the previous 5 years Warriors, right?
Right.
And he was so committed to the idea that these Warriors, the 2019-20 Warriors, were going to win. This is even before Steph got hurt.
Yeah.
And so that was just one of those moments like, bro, I can't believe that I'm here right now. Another one was when I got a chance a couple of years ago. I did a story on Marvin Gaye singing the national anthem. Bro, it was a shot in the dark. I really just shot my shot. And I sent the Miami Heat PR team an email. Said, hey, look, you know, this is a story I'm doing. Pat Riley was the Western Conference coach that year. And obviously the game was played at the Great Western Forum. Send the email. I didn't expect to hear anything back. hour later, it was like, Pat loves the idea. He really doesn't get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
So he'll give us your number. He'll call you on such and such day. Bro, he called me. I was nervous as hell, bro.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
This is Pat Riley, you know what I mean? Like, Pat Riley. And I had all my questions written down in a Google Doc. I was like, all right, Justin, when you use this type of vocal inflection when you ask, you know what I mean? This is your follow-up question if you
said this.
Bro, like, my first question was, and he's one of the nicest people I've ever talked to.
Mm-hmm.
My first question was, what did Marvin Gaye's music mean to you? On everything, Ed, on the letters, bro. This man spoke for 15 minutes straight just about Marvin Gaye, just about Motown, what, you know, how Marvin Gaye was like one of the biggest inspirations and reasons why he started to really understand like the racial dynamic in America, the economic dynamic in America. And yeah. he was just like, yo, thank you for asking me that question because I don't get asked that question a lot.
Of course.
So, I mean, there's so many more, but like those are just the ones that really populate in my head right now.
Yeah, and you know, I call Pat Riley respectfully an OG, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the questions that's been a staple question of the pod is, you know, I think about, all right, this is, you know, Tens knows more than anybody about my Uncle Bill, right?
A true legend,
right? And so I just think about like the OGs in my family and what they used to drink, right? And like, what does that represent to like where my family comes from and like how we used to get down? So like my grandmother used to drink Johnny Walker Red and milk, right? With an olive in it. Mm. That was like a drink. That was like her thing. I didn't even realize she used to run a bar, and it was called the Chat and Chew in Lawton, Oklahoma, where all the military soldiers would come in late night to get some drinks after, you know, doing whatever in the field, right?
And they
came in there, and she hooked them all up because they knew, and they treated her with the utmost respect because if they didn't, my grandfather, who did 27 years in the service and served in World War II and the Korean War, and was running the military police, would at worst make sure they could not get back on base. B, he would probably curry some favor to make sure that they did something like mow our yard, cut the grass, basically like, oh, I got you over the barrel now. You about to pay what you owe for being disrespectful in my spot, right? And so, like, I always think about that. And then I think about my uncle. Yeah, my uncle drinks Thunderbird wine, which is like a $4 wine you can get at a corner store, but he's been drinking it since he's 17, and you're not gonna tell him that it ain't the greatest thing that he's ever sipped in life. And then my mother drinks like E&J Irken Jerk. Like, this is what she drinks.
Irken Jerk, yeah.
Right? And so it's funny because I didn't pick up, I can't say that. I used to drink Johnny Walker Red, not milk, not olive in it. And I remember that my grandmother used to also play Pinochle and Bidwist with her lady friends from her church group and her social group and stuff. And the story is that she used to pick me up in her arms while sipping Johnny Walker Red. And I would start telling all the cards in her hand. And they were like, oh, we knew you were going to be good at math at age 4 when you was telling everybody's hand and saying that they couldn't beat my grandmother's hand. But you know, I'm also telling my grandmother's hand. So she was like, Deborah, take this baby out of my hands and get him away from me because I'm about to lose this money. And I'm like, first of all, right. grandma was out here gambling and drinking. Like, she a lady in the church and everything. Mm-hmm. And so like, I wonder to you, like, what did you experience in your, not only in your family, but like the OGs when you were growing up, like, what are the things that you saw them consume and how did they used to kick it and get down when you was like a tyke? Cause like, I think these memories like really stick with us.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really, really good question. My uncle drank. My uncle who passed in 1999 from colon cancer. So you have Uncle Bill. Like for me, mine is Uncle John.
Uncle John, yeah.
Yeah. So you know, that's a good question, and I'm not sure what it was that he drank, but you know, I mean, he definitely had like his beers or whatnot when he came home from when he came home from work. But I know he was definitely a whiskey fan. And it had to have been Jameson because the bottle was green. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? From what I can remember. So, like, and I guess that's why there was a large point in my life where I would just drink Jameson and ginger ale. Like, yeah. I wouldn't drink anything else. Anything else. Like, yo, give me a JMO and ginger. For real. Right. Straight up.
Yeah.
But, you know, my aunt Cint, she's a huge, huge influence on me as well. That's my uncle's sister and also mm-hmm. my mom's sister. She's really big on red wine. And mm-hmm. so I credit her with putting me onto game in terms of where my palate for wine came from.
Yeah.
And so she's part of like a wine club. She's been part of a wine club for like well over like 30 years now. So they'll just send her bottles.
Yeah.
Just off the cuff. And whenever I go home to see like my mom and my grandma, and she lives right across the street, so I go see her as well, she'll be like, hey, take these 6 bottles of wine with you.
Oh, man, bless.
She's been doing that for years.
Yeah.
So that's where it really came from. And again, it's my uncle, it's my aunt, because my mom really didn't drink a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't remember ever seeing my mom drink anything like that. I don't remember ever seeing like my grandmother drink anything like that. So I don't remember too much of that. But if I had to think of two people, it's definitely my uncle and my aunt. And yeah. You know, they two of the coolest people I've ever met in my life. So shout out to them.
Yeah, and I think I wonder now too, especially with, you know, I was talking to my Uncle Bill about it. And it's funny, I just sent him, I sent him this rum that he said he's been kind of having a jonesing for some rum. And there's this black owned distillery that does rum now. And I sent him a bottle and we were just talking about it. And then we were just talking about things that's happening in the streets right now with, you know, the social unrest. And, you know, you actually put something out today talking about from Baldwin and mm-hmm. his conversation about the thought of looting. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, have you had the conversation with your OGs about like how they see what's happening in the streets now and like what we're experiencing? Because, you know, my uncle was like, yo, the young energy now, like he feels like he has a lot of faith in us. That mm-hmm. we, you know, I think at a different time he was like, this generation needs a Martin Luther King and this generation needs a Malcolm X. And I used to tell him like, man, we got about 150 or 200 of them. Like they might not be so singular in stature, but it doesn't mean that the spirit of Malcolm and Martin, you know, and Garvey and Huey P. and folks like that, they're still very alive. It's just they're in multitudes now. And I wonder, like, have you went in the conversations you've had with yours, like how have they gone? Is there anything that's illuminated or stands out to you?
Yeah. The one person, not one, because I talk to a lot of people, but one person I've been talking to about these types of subjects for years is my grandmother.
Yeah.
And so for full context, my grandmother was born in 1931. She just recently turned 89. Bless up, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about these type of topics all the time. And, you know, I ask her, you've seen so much. Like you mm-hmm. were born in the Great Depression. You lived in the Deep South in the 1930s and 40s. So you can already imagine, you know, what type of experiences she had growing up. And, you know, you lived through the Civil Rights Movement. You've seen all those leaders who spoke up and for Black lives in the 60s get murdered. You know, you lived through Reagan, you lived through Clinton and Bush, both Bushes, and saw Obama, and now you're living through the Trump era. Like, what gives you hope? And she told me, she was like, look, I'm well aware that I will probably leave this world with some of the same problems that were here when I was born. And she was like, that saddens her, mm-hmm. but she's also very, she sees what's going on in the street now. And she'll tell you, out of 89 years, she's never felt anything like this.
Wow.
And which says a lot.
Yeah.
Which says a lot. So, yeah. And so she looks at me and she knows, like, look, there'll never be another Malcolm X. There'll never be another Martin Luther King, because at the end of the day, God is only going to bless your life with those type of people one time.
Right.
But she also understands that, and this is where she really put a battery in my back, because sometimes I feel like, man, what am I doing? Like, am I doing enough? Like, I need to be doing this. And she told me, and, you know, other older OGs, just to use your term, have told me too. It's like, yeah, your purpose is the work you create.
Yeah.
You know, your purpose is the work you create, and the stories that you tell, and the perspectives that you offer during these times of strife and unrest. Like, that is what your purpose to the quote unquote movement is. And I feel like that's so many of us. I feel like there's so many brilliant people out here nowadays speaking truth to power in their own ways.
Yeah.
You know, I look at somebody like Bomani. Like, Bomani is somebody who I look up to. That dude something crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I look up to that dude something crazy. I think he's one of the smartest people I've ever met, and he speaks so brilliantly on a wide range of topics. So you got people like him. I look at people like David Dennis. I look at Jamel.
You just naming future podcast guests, man. That's all you're doing.
Hey, man, well, look, that is what it is, man. Like, you need to have them on here. That they'll make for an even better podcast than this one. You
know? Yeah.
So, like, I feel like that is all of our purposes. That is all of our roles, to just, you know, be able to tell the truth fearlessly in our own special way. Because, you know, I can't do what David does or Jamel does or Bomani does. And I'm just naming them because I just named them right now.
Yeah, of course.
So, but that's where, you know, my grandmother told me to find strength in my talents, because God didn't grant me with the talent just to, you know what I mean, just to waste it. Like, you got to understand, you got to lean into it.
Yeah.
You're saying, I'm not James Baldwin. I'm not writing The Fire Next Time, but if I want to write something on the Chappelle stand-up and, you know what I mean, correlate that with James Baldwin's interview with Esquire in 1968, then that you're doing a service to the times, because you're speaking on something that actually matters in the moment, and people will always remember that. So that's what OGs really tell me, is like, yo, don't only just be confident in your voice, lean in on your voice and understand that it is serving a purpose and it is providing a service that is absolutely needed.
Quick aside, you know what's infuriating about Bomani is he don't take notes. He just goes. There are legendary stories of him doing the radio show, and he will be doing a crossword puzzle while thoroughly breaking down the hypocrisy of paying college athletes, and doing it and hitting the nail on the head and getting out so that the commercial can break. And it's like, yo, who made you, bro? Like, what is this? Like, what is this cheat code, man?
He's fascinating, bro. Like, he's like, whatever lane you want to put him in, he's like Biggie Smalls. Like, Biggie never wrote. Biggie would just sit there, go in the booth, and drop like a classic 16. And like you said, Bomani be over here doing a crossword puzzle, and then next thing you know, he'll break down to you why Dabo Sweeney is, you know, hypocritical in this, while also talking about college athletes getting paid, while also talking about like a Prince concert from 1985 and why it was the most important moment of the year, and it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, bro, there's still a long way I got to go to, you know, I mean, really make my mark in this game, but he's definitely somebody I look up to.
Yeah, I think we're really blessed to have good contacts that look out for us. You've had a lot of discussion about Chappelle, and I'm gonna save some of the Chappelle talk for later. But one thing that we do on every pod is something that I was very inspired by regarding Chappelle, is when he was on the Inside the Actor Studio, he was interviewed by James Lipton. All right, mm-hmm. And so during every interview, they give a questionnaire. And this was inspired by renowned journalists and thought provocateurs, Proust and Prevo. Now I'm trying to pull out first names. I ain't that fancy. I just know the last names of Proust and Prevo, but whatever. So I kind of modified it. And so I'm going to run you through the questionnaire. And, you know, we're going to have fun with it. And
let's do it.
And the first one is always the easy one. This is the softball, but I give you one thing to sip. This is your favorite thing. What is it?
Oh, right now I'm doing Casamigos.
Okay. As straight or a little, what you putting in it? Anything in particular?
I honestly can sip it straight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
Casamigos straight.
All right. What is something that you used to drink that you would never drink now? So I'll go first because I feel like I always like embarrassing myself. But when I didn't know what the hell I was doing, I was drinking Malibu coconut rum and Sprite. Yo, but I would go to the bar with confidence. Malibu rum and Sprite. Hey, dog, what you want? And they'd be looking at me like, I don't know him. I order on my own. And like, I would drink that rather confidently for years in my early 20s. And it's good to say that I have evolved from that particular order. What about you?
Oh, okay. So I'm about to throw one of my homeboys under the bus. But also, it's me because I used to drink it with them. So back in college, this is before we turned 21, and you know, it just happens. The statute of limitations is over. You can't get it. Bro, so one of my homeboys, I won't say his name, but that he was such a big Rockefeller Records fan.
Yeah. And oh God, I already know where this is going.
You already know where this is going, bro. Like, so Dame Dash used to have that liquor, Armadale.
Yeah, Armadale vodka now. Yeah.
Bro, like
only bring a brother more. Yeah.
Bro, he let me try that joint one time. Like, we took a shot of it. Bro, I literally saw my 19, 20-year-old life flash before my eyes when I took that shot. I'm like, bro, this is the nastiest vodka I've ever tasted in my life. I hope Dame Dash doesn't see this and come whoop my ass. But, bro, but you know what? I kept drinking it because the same way Michael Jordan used to market Gatorade.
You trying Dame to be Dash, like Dame and Hov.
Yeah. Look, Dame was in the videos doing all this. You know, like, but it got to a point where I was like, I can't drink this anymore. This is, like, legit nasty. Like, I don't know any alcohol that tastes, like, delicious or, like, oh, I can wake up and drink it. But I have to at least enjoy drinking it. And, like, this is a true chore. So I had to say that. You know, in college, everybody, you didn't purposely do it, but it was at every house party. People would mix Aristocrat vodka with everything.
And I have never heard of that, but that sounds
dangerous. You never heard of Aristocrat?
No. Oh,
bro, it came in a plastic bottle.
I mean, that's bottle. A surefire sign right there.
Yeah. So that would be the Armadale and 1B would be Aristocrat.
Were you an Incredible Hulk consumer?
You know, I haven't. I've only had like one or two Incredible Hulks in my entire life.
That's enough.
Trust me, that is enough. So I would say no, but I have had it before.
When was the last time you had your tears moment? When was the last time you celebrated clink drinks over something that was really special to you?
Oh man, that's actually, it was probably like the last time outside was actually open. Mm-hmm. Probably like a week before all this quarantine stuff started happening. I went to New Orleans with my girlfriend, mm-hmm. and she had a bunch of friends come down there as well. And so, obviously, New Orleans is one of the greatest cities in the world, and especially if you like to drink, it's even, you know, it's the perfect city. Yeah. So we had several moments where we were just toasting up, cheering, and we talk about it, you know, quite often now. It was like, we did not realize the world was going to change a week later, but I'm glad we got that moment in. So, yeah, we definitely toasted to the good times that week or that weekend.
Is there a spirit or a distillery that you've wanted to try and you haven't had a chance to, or is there like a distillery that you've wanted to go visit and go see how the process was made? Is there anything that sticks out to you in that way?
Yeah, well, you know, I've had it because we actually just spoke about it a little earlier when we were talking about Danielle Smith. Mm-hmm. I would love to see how Macallan is made. Like, it's such a delicious drink, but that thing, I don't even say it packs a punch. It packs like a Mike Tyson, like right hook, like if you're not careful. So I would love to see the process of how that liquor has come to, because I've been to quite a few wineries and they've shown me how the process in terms of making wine, in terms of how long it has to sit, how long it has to ferment and all that. So I feel like I'm somewhat familiar with that process, but I've never actually seen how alcohol like vodka or whiskey is made. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sorry, hold on. No, you good. I think, you know, going to Scotland, I think is really interesting. I think it's on my to-do list, to go to Scotland. First off, I just, you know, the thought and the idea of a bunch of black folk going to Scotland to go see how scotch is made is just a visual I just want to take in for the rest of my life. I want that to happen, number one. But then two, you know, the thing that's really interesting about Scotland is that you have like the highlands and the lowlands. And so like you can actually tell the difference of like, you know, when the water trickles down from the highlands to the lowlands, like the water effect is just very different. And so you can see the effect that peat has on the process of scotch. And you realize like, yo, this is a generational upon generational process that, you know, there's a reason why there's an 18 on the bottle. That's how long it took for us to be able to drink in the first place. And like, this is
for sure
something that they're bottling and they're waiting 18 years to release. And they do it in a single malt process. So, you know, like seeing how that is done and seeing the care of a family business, almost all of these distilleries are family businesses, by the way. So like, that's like another thing that is very personal, very intimate. So, you know, my choice is, you know, I definitely want to go to Scotland and do that. I always try to encourage people to take one trip to Kentucky because, well, A, you should go to Kentucky for a few reasons. One, you should go to Rupp Arena to go see a Kentucky basketball game. Two, you should go to the Kentucky Derby to go see how black folk kick it in at the Kentucky Derby because, man,
I got to get there.
Oh, that's a time, bro. That's a really good time. And then the third reason you should go to Kentucky, so you should go down the Bourbon Trail. And that is just a really uplifting experience. And then you start to realize that, like, you know, you go to the Buffalo Trace Distillery and, like, the headmaster of the distillery in Buffalo Trace is a black man. And it's been in charge there for three generations, which is cool. And you don't even know that. Like, that's a really cool thing. So, yeah, like, when COVID decides to, you know, go away, God willing, you know, right, that's definitely on the to-do list.
For sure.
Number five, what's the best thing you've listened to from a – what artist are you jamming on repeat right now?
Oh, well, you know, I wrote a story last week on Freddie Gibbs' album.
Alfredo.
Yes. Yeah, I've really, really been from like a rap perspective in terms of new releases. I've really, really been jamming to that.
Yeah.
But you know, recently, man, you know what album that I've been listening to a lot lately? And I always, obviously, it's always been a classic, but I've really gone back to it and just hearing the vulnerability throughout that project. And I'm talking about Mary J's My Life album.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what drew me back to that album. Obviously, it's a great album, and I don't need a reason to listen to it. But like, when you listen to that album under the circumstances in which we're living right now, like it hits home in a way that it hadn't previously before for me. So, I listen to, obviously, as you know, I listen to a lot of music, but that Freddie Gibbs joint and Mary J. My Life, definitely for sure.
What are your favorite pair of sneakers of all time? Number six.
Oh, and I never got them. I don't know if I ever will, but the South Beach LeBron 8.
Why? For whatever reason, I forgot that I knew you were going to say LeBron's. Like, I don't know why. I was thinking like, oh, he's going to say like a Jordan or something like that. No, of course it's LeBron. The South Beaches are flambé, of course. So that I am not shocked at all. By the way, you're wrong.
That's fine. I mean, look, I am not John Gotti. I'm not a sneaker connoisseur. Granted, I know it looks good. I'm not saying they're the number one shoe of all time, but you asked me my personal one.
Hey, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
All right, Justin Tinsley, I have now give you the choice of being a fighter, a wrestler, or a baseball player. What is your walk up or entrance music?
Ooh.
So I'll give you a second because I can already tell you mine. Because when I got married, and I'm going to repeat this on the podcast every time because I said it on the last one. I told Paige, I said, when we walk into this room, we're walking into March Madness. And she was like, I support that 100%. And I was like, God damn it, that's why I'm marrying your ass, right? Like, this is why we are a match made in heaven. And we walked in the future March Madness. And it was as a kid said, it was a movie in there. It was great. So that will forever and always be my selection.
Ooh, I can't.
Yes, you can.
No, I'm just saying I can't pick March Madness because you already picked it. Oh. But that is a really, really good one. Damn. What would be my you said baseball player?
You could choose
a fighter.
If you are a boxer or a UFC fighter or you are a baseball player and you doing your walk up, your entrance music, what you walking into, what you calling to the plate, what if you going to the plate, what are you walking up to?
All right. I'm gonna break it down like this. If I'm a boxer, I reserve right to change this because I'm sure I'll have another song in an hour if you text me. But if I'm a boxer, I'm walking out to Never Scared, that Bone Crusher Killer Mike T.I. joint. And I gotta do T.I. verse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a T.I. verse was super crazy. Baseball. What's my walk up music? Hold on. I'm thinking. Baseball.
I feel like you would do something like VA. I feel like you go back to VA with it.
Yeah, I could. I could also do Last Time That I Checked by Nipsey.
Hey,
if I'm a baseball player, yeah.
All right.
And what was the third one?
No, that's good. It's your choice. You gave me the two for one. So that's actually perfect, man. That's good. Yeah. All right, number eight. So without getting too crazy, what is the most crazy true story from a night of partying, clubbing, being out on the town that you can remember that's worth sharing?
Damn. That takes into account that I would have to remember it.
I'll tell a story of the time.
I know it. All right, but go ahead.
When I was in New Orleans, it's always like New Orleans, right? I was in New Orleans.
Got to be the South.
And I was at NABJ. Mm-hmm. And this just happened to be the time that some of our mutual friends, you might know him as Dragonfly Jones and LeJethro Jenkins and I'm Chris 24.
Two legends.
Yeah.
Three legends. Yeah. Three legends.
Our girl Tanisha and
four legends.
You know what I'm saying? Javon. So we was so imagine being at a party and it's those people. And then I'm also there with Bomani, Michael Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Jamel, legend. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like all kicking it at the House of Blues in New Orleans. And I remember having a tremendous night. I don't quite remember how I got home. All I know is someone sent a photo of me riding off in a horse and carriage like Cameron, leaving House of Blues. going back to my hotel room, and I don't remember it. So that is my one of my better true stories that happened from a night of hanging out and kicking it.
Okay, so I'm gonna keep it in the South.
Okay,
this is Houston, Texas. I want to say around like March 2013 or so.
All right.
So a buddy of mine. Excuse me, a buddy of mine's getting married, and I fly down to Houston a couple of years before ESPN. I can't even remember where I was working at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, yo, I've never been to Houston. I'm going to go. My boy picked me up from the airport. He take me to this, like, hole-in-the-wall taco spot, and he was like, yo, eat all the tacos you want here because we going to the strip club after this.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, bet. Let's do it. And so, come to find out, we finishing up. He get the text. It was like, "Yo, it's BYOB. BYOB at the strip club."
That sounds like, dangerous.
I'm like, "Bro, what strip club are we going to?" Bro, we went to Dream. I think it was Dream. Yeah, it was Dreams in Houston. That's where Malia was working. She wasn't there that night.
Mm.
And Malia, for the people who may not know, if you remember the Lil Wayne and Drake song was "A Miss Me." Someone called Malia, tell her I'm on fire. She should work
for me.
So she wasn't there that night, but all of her friends were.
Okay.
So we get there, and my boy, so we got like bottles and tuck.
Yeah.
And my boy is like, yo, man, we can't do gin pop. We got to get a table. And I'm like, I'm all for it. I ain't trying to do gin pop. We right. get a table on like the, there's like, at least, I don't know if they've renovated it or not since. Mm. But when you walk in there, you can, there's like the I won't say basement, but the lobby level floor where the stage yeah. is.
They've got a second seat. Tier that you
yeah,
can
Yeah, they
go
got
up.
A second yep. tier.
Not that
we
I know.
Second tier. Yeah, not so you.
So, heard, so I've heard, yeah.
So we get there and we got our own table, man. Next thing you know, the dollars start flying. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the ladies come up there, have a good time. And it's just, it's really, I mean, it's a night in the strip club there. Like, man, I feel like a rapper. Like, I look mm-hmm. on the floor, there's like, there's money everywhere. For somehow, I can't remember how it happened. But, you know, one of the young ladies and myself, we were like sitting on the couch. We got into a true in-depth debate about the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm talking like we're going like back and she's calling out stats, I'm calling out stats. Like, yo, what is going on here? And dog, she was like, oh, my fault, I gotta work. So like she's dancing and we're having conversations the whole time. She was like, no, Durant should be MVP for X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, no, it's definitely LeBron's. What are you talking about? And so I'm like this the whole time. We ended up like, man, she ended up bringing more bottles, more drinks. It was such a crazy time. And so 3 hours into it, bro, I'm like, all right, what is going on here? I don't need no more to drink. I see a shadowy figure like in the corner. I'm like, who is this? I go down to get some water from the bar, bro. I don't even know. Can I say who it is?
Go for it.
Like, no, it's Vince Young. I'm like, oh, bro, what is Vince Young doing? And he was just chilling.
Yeah.
He having a corona.
Sound about right.
You know, and so once the money dried up, then, you know, obviously the attention flew away. But that was probably my claim to fame strip club moment. But I also had a very, very productive and in-depth NBA debate with Chocolate Thunder.
Hot takes and cakes.
Hot takes and cakes. That is it. That is it, brother. That is the byline. Hot takes and cakes.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to save us both from this conversation. I'm going to move on to number 9. Woo, Jesus. All right. Just as I give you a golden ticket to play in any game show, but the caveat is that you must win. And if you don't, you have to drink Armadale vodka for a year. What game All show right. are you playing?
It's a game show that I have to win.
Yes.
What's the one? It's on TV now. I can't forget. But it's like they ask you the trivia questions in the taxi.
They ask you the trivia questions in the taxi. I don't know.
Hold on, let me. Hold on.
I know which one you're talking about. It's like, because they do it for one of the talk shows. And
yeah, hold on. I'm about. Oh, it's called Cash Cab. It's called
Cash Cab. All right.
Yeah. So yeah, I could do. I was gonna say Jeopardy, but like, nah, I ain't that smart to win Jeopardy. You know, I ain't Rosie Perez on White Man Can't Jump. What is a quince? You
know? I could win sports. Cash I could win. I could win sports Jeopardy. I think I could win sports Jeopardy. I could win $10,000 pyramid, which, by the way, or now the $100,000 pyramid hosted by our own Michael Strahan. Also, $100,000 pyramid, the greatest game show music of all time, without a doubt. But yeah, a cash cow sounds like a move. Okay, that was a safe. I feel that was a little bit of a safe answer. But again, like
you said the one I knew I could win.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's only like five or six questions. Like
I ain't mad. And besides, like, Armadale vodka does not sound like something worth consuming in the year of our Lord 2020.
I could not imagine that. I think I'd rather drink rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, no, let's not drink either of those in 2020. How about that?
No, hell no. Hell no.
All right, last question. I tell you, you get to have drinks with Maverick Carter.
Okay.
What do you drink And how does the conversation go?
The thing is with that, you got to drink something that you know that you could go multiple rounds with. Because, mm-hmm. like, you don't want to drink something that's going to, like, get you faded off of, like, one or two.
Okay.
So, with Casamigos.
Okay.
Mix.
I feel like Mav is an old fashioned kind of dude. And,
I can see old fashioned, yeah.
The thing is with Mav is Mav likes wine. The thing about LeBron and Mav is they're definitely wine drinkers.
I can do that.
Yeah. They're probably wine drinkers, but I bet they could take down bottles.
I mean,
at a time.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if we're drinking wine, and all right, so I'm going with a vintage Cab or a vintage Malbec.
Okay.
And so we let's say we two bottles into it. I need to know what was y'all reaction when you found out Dan Gilbert wrote that letter? I need the unfiltered reaction. Like I don't give me, because I understand
this is off the record.
Yeah, I need the off the record convo about that. I need the off the record convo just about, you know what I mean, when y'all went down to Boston in 2012, like, you know, what was that conversation like, bro? If we lose tonight, like, it's going to get, I need that. I need, you know, what was it like when he saw Kyrie go down in game one of the finals?
Mm.
What was it like? What is his unfiltered thoughts about Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dog, there's so many ways this conversation can go. Like, you know, when did y'all realistically make the decision? Like, all right, we going to LA. You could tell me, like, oh, no, it was just something that was decided in the summer of 2018. But no, bro, like, I read the report. Like, ain't nobody going to make that stuff up.
Yes.
And honestly, I would love to know, like, what was Maverick Carter's thoughts in 2002, 2003 about LeBron? Obviously, he was always close with him, and LeBron always kept those dudes close. But, like, how much pressure did they feel on themselves back in that day? Because, remember, LeBron fired a really, really good agent in Aaron Goodwin. You know, a lot of people – I can pull up the articles right now. People were asking LeBron, like, does he know what he's doing? Like, why would he employ his friends? Like, what was that pressure that y'all felt like in 2004, 2005, 2006 when, you know, it wasn't always, you know, nobody – uninterrupted was only a word. You know what I mean? Right. At that point. So, the conversations I can go with Maverick Carter, bro, like, what were y'all thinking when the Celtics eliminated the Cavs in 2010? Like, bro, there's so many. I guess the question would be, how many bottles does Maverick have?
Now, that's a good question. That's the question where I'm like, bro, I bet, like, the question would be, what do you have more of, a pair of sneakers or bottles of wine? And truthfully, I think it's probably bottles. But Tinsley, man, you are the man. It's fun to see people you know grow. And
absolutely.
You know, the good thing is two things. One, you still ain't shit. And two,
very true.
And two, you still got a lot of room to grow. And so, you know, I'm happy to be able to witness that and be in your corner and you my guy. And so, you know, long live the Unsportsmanlike Conduct Show and long live light skinned dudes with beards and backward hats and glasses, you know what I'm saying? And we out here, bro. And you're the man, bro. I love you, bro. And it's definitely good having you on.
Not even just to like gas you up on your own show, man, but you are really truly one of the most, you know, I mean, giving people I've ever met in my life. You know, we talk about the best point guards in the NBA or whatnot. Bro, you are the true. You always compare yourself to Sam Perkins or whatnot. but like you are the true definition of a point guard, bro. Like you will gladly help somebody out. You will gladly put somebody in position to succeed. And you've been doing that with me since well before the four letters or anything, man. So it is a true honor and privilege to call you a brother, man. And I got none but love for you, as Heavy D once said, dog. I got none but love for you.
Hey, man, I appreciate that, bro. Cheers to you, man. And we look forward to having you back on here soon.
Please do, man.
Yes, sir.